This was a more precise method of determining the depth of the bait and amount of dropback. However, it required patience and experience and fortitude to hand-hold the line rather than merely to loll in the chair and leave it in the clip of the outrigger. Carefully, Shaza stripped 100 feet of line off the big finor and coiled it on the deck. Then he perched on the stern of La Bonheur and called to the skipper, "Allez!" The skipper engaged the gear lever, and the propeller began to turn lazily. The diesel engine was ticking over at idling revs, and La Bonheur began to inch forward against the send of the swells. Slowly she built up to a leisurely walking speed. The tension on the line in Shaza's hand increased. He could feel the weight of the bonito on the other end. The fish began to follow the boat like a dog on a leash. Shaza judged the depth of the bait by the angle at which the line entered the water. He could tell the condition and liveliness of the bonito by the faint vibration of its tail and the intermittent tugs and jerks it gave as it attempted to turn or dive. Within minutes, Shaza's arm was numb and cramping, but he ignored the discomfort and called up to Elsa on the bridge, "How about a little bit more of your fiddle-me-diddle-me magic?"
"It only works once," she shook her head. "From here on you are on your own."
At slow speed, La Bonheur rolled sluggishly over the swells, and at Shaza's order began a wide and gentle turn into the north. Halfway through the turn, the line went slack in Shaza's hand, and he stood up quickly from his seat on the gunwale.
"What is it?"
Elsa called down eagerly.
"Probably nothing," he grunted.
But all his concentration was on the feel of the line. It came taut again, but now the bonito's movements were altered. He could feel its frantic struggles transmitted through his fingertips. It ducked and dived and tried to turn, but the gentle progress of La Bonheur drew it forward remorselessly.
"Attention!"
Shaza alerted the crew.
"What is happening?"
Elsa asked again.
"Something's frightening the bonito," he answered. "It's seen something down there."
He could imagine the terror of the small fish as the gigantic shadow circled it stealthily in the blue underworld of the ocean. The marlin would be wary. The bonito was behaving unnaturally. It should have darted away instantly. The marlin stalked it gingerly, but soon its appetite would exceed its caution. Shaza waited a minute, and another minute, crouched over the transom, rigid with excitement. Suddenly the line was plucked from his fingers, but for an instant he felt the mighty weight and majesty of the marlin as it struck the bonito with the broad, blunt edge of its spike.
"Strike!"
Shaza howled, holding both arms above his head.
"Stop engines!"
Obediently, the skipper slipped the gear lever into neutral, and La Bonheur wallowed dead in the water. Shaza picked up the line again and held it with the lightest pressure of his fingertips. It was slack. No sign of life. The bonito had been killed instantly by that massive blow. Vividly, he imagined what was happening in those mysterious blue depths. The marlin had killed, and now it circled again. It might lose interest, or become alarmed by the unnatural movement of the carcass. It was essential that no movement or drift on the line scared it off. The seconds dripped like treacle, slow and sticky.
"He's making another circle," Shaza tried to encourage himself.
Still nothing happened.
"Il est parti,"
the skipper announced lugubriously.
"Il a refusé."
"I'll kick your pessimistic butt if you wish it on me,"
Shaza told him furiously.
"He hasn't bloody well partied yet. He's coming around for another circle."
The line twitched in his fingers, and Shaza let out a shout of relief.
"Le voilà! There he is!"
Elsa clapped her hands.
"Eat, fish. Smell that lovely sweet flesh. Eat it," she implored.
The line jiggled and tugged softly, and Shaza let a few inches slide through his fingers. He could imagine the marlin picking up the carcass in its horny beak and turning it head first to swallow it down.
"Don't let him feel the hook," Shaza whispered a prayer.
The loop of line should allow the point of the hook to lie flat against the bonito's head as it slid down the marlin's gaping maw. If, however, the loop had twisted or hung up, Shaza did not want to think about that. There was another long pause, and then the line came taut again and began to move off with sedate but purposeful momentum.
"He swallowed it,"
Sharza exulted, and let the line flow through his fingers. Coil after coil unwound from the deck and slipped away over the transom. Sharza leapt to the swivel chair and swung himself into the seat. He clipped the harness to the rings on top of the glittering Finnor reel. The harness formed a hammock-like sling around his lower back and buttocks and was attached directly to the reel. Only the ignorant or the deliberately misinformed believed that the angler was buckled into the chair like a fighter pilot, and that this gave him some sort of unsporting advantage. The only thing that kept him in the chair was his own strength and balance. If he made a mistake, the fish, weighing over 1,000 pounds, as fast and powerful as a marine diesel engine, could pluck him and the rod effortlessly over the side and give him a very swift trip down the 500-fathom mark. As Sharza settled behind the rod and engaged the brake, the line came up short against the spool, and the rod tip bowed over, as though it was kowtowing to the fish's brute strength. Sharza thrust his feet against the footboard and took the strain with his legs.
"Allez!"
he yelled at Martin, the skipper.
"Go!"
The diesel bellowed as Martin opened the throttle wide, and a dense cloud of oily black diesel smoke belched from the exhausts. La Bonheur leapt forward and crashed her shoulder into the swell. No man had the strength to drive the point of the huge mustad hook into the iron-hard mouth of the marlin. Sharza was using the power and speed of the boat to set the hook, to bury the barb deep in the horny beak. The spool of the reel hummed against its own massive brake pads, and the line streamed away in a white blur.
"Arrêtez-vous!"
Sharza judged that the hook was in.
"Stop!"
he cried, and Martin closed the throttle. They stopped and hung in the water. The rod was arched over as though the line were attached to the bottom of the ocean, but the reel was still held by the brake. Then the fish shook his head, and the power of it crashed the butt of the rod back and forth in its gimbal, as though it were a twig in a high wind.
"Here he goes!" Sharza howled.
The fish had been taken aback by the unexpected drag of the line, but even La Bonheur had been unable to move his massive body against the drag of the water. Now, at last, he realized that something was seriously wrong, and he made his first mad run. Once again the line poured off the reel in a molten blur, and Sharza was lifted high off the seat like a jockey pushing for the post. So great was the friction in the massive Finnor reel that it began to smoke. The grease on the bearings melted and boiled. It bubbled and spurted from the casing in steaming jets. Leaning back with the full weight of his body, Sharza kept both hands well clear of the humming reel. The Dacron line was as dangerous as the blade of a butcher's bandsaw. It could take off a finger effortlessly, or slash skin and flesh and muscle to the bone. The fish ran as though there were no restraint upon him. The line on the spool melted away. 300 yards were gone, then 4, and in seconds, half a kilometre of line had gone over the side.
"He's a goddamn Chinaman, and he's going home to Daddy,"
Sharza yelled.
"He's never going to stop."
Abruptly, the ocean parted in a maelstrom of white water, and the fish came out. Such was his girth and mass that he gave the illusion of moving in slow motion. He rose into the air, and the water poured from his body as though from the hull of a surfacing submarine. He came all the way out, and though he was 500 yards from La Bonheur, he seemed to blot out half the sky.
"Qu'il est grand!" shrieked Martin. "Je n'ai jamais vu un autre comme ça!"
And Sharza knew it was true. He had never seen a fish to match this one, not by half. He seemed to light the heavens with a reflected blue radiance, a flash of distant lightning. Then, like a steeplechaser taking a fence, the fish reached the zenith of its leap and curved back to the surface of the ocean. It opened in a shockwave to its bulk, and then he was gone, leaving them all shaken by the memory of his majesty. The line was blurring from the reel. Though Sharza had the brake dangerously heavy, pushing the drag up near the 120-pound braking strain, it still streamed away as though there were no check upon it.
Tournez-vous! Turn! Turn!
There was an edge of panic in Shaz's voice as he yelled at the skipper, Turn and chase him! With full rudder and opposite engine thrust, Martin spun the boat on its heel, and they roared away in pursuit of the fish. La Bonheur was rushing into wind and current, and the swells battered her. She dug her nose into them and burst them open in white spray. Then, as she leapt over the crests, she was almost airborne, and came pounding down into the troughs on her belly. In the chair, Shaza was thrown around mercilessly. He hung on to the arms of the chair and rode the swells with his legs, his backside not touching the seat. The rod was bent like a longbow at full stretch. Even though La Bonheur was running at full throttle, he was still losing line. The Marlin was outrunning them by 10 knots. The line on the reel wasted away, and Shaza watched helplessly as the spool seemed to shrink.
Shaza! Elsa shrieked from the bridge. He has turned!
She was so excited that she spoke in Italian. Shaza had by now enough practice with the language to understand her warning.
Stop! Arrete!
He howled at the skipper. For no apparent reason, the Marlin had suddenly turned completely about and was charging back towards the boat. This was not yet apparent from the direction that the line was running into the water. The Marlin had thrown a half-mile loop in the line, which was potentially catastrophic. The side drag of the loop in the water could snap the heavy line like cotton when the Marlin came up tight on it. Elsa had spotted the turn in the very nick of time. Shaza had to pick up that loop before the Marlin passed under the boat. He pumped with his legs in a powerful mechanical rhythm, coming up to gain a foot of line, sinking down to give himself slack, to take it onto the reel with two quick turns of the handle. Up and down he bobbed, grunting for air with each cycle, legs and arms working together, and the wet line coming onto the spool under such tension that a fine haze of droplets sprayed from the braid. The line was cutting sideways through the water, slicing a tiny feather from the surface. The loop was shrinking. The fish passed under the boat. The line began to straighten. Shaza pumped with a frantic rhythm, getting those last few turns of line onto the reel.
Turn now! He gasped.
Sweat was pouring down his naked chest. It mingled with the lipstick design that Elsa had drawn and ran down to stain the waistband of his shorts.
Turn, quickly, quickly!
The fish was tearing away in the opposite direction, and the skipper got La Bonheur around just as the line came up tight again. The full weight of the fish came down on the rod tip, and it whipped over like a willow tree struck by a gale of wind. Shaza was levered up out of the chair to the full stretch of his legs, and the strain on the line was ounces short of snapping it. He thumbed off the brake, releasing the tension, and the line crackled off the spool at 50 miles an hour. With despair, he watched as those precious feet of line, which he had won back with so much effort, blurred effortlessly over the side.
"Chase him!" he blurted,
and La Bonheur pounded after the fish. It was exquisite teamwork now. No single man could subdue a fish like this one, alone and unaided. The handling of the boat was critical. Each turn and run and backup had to be quick and precise. Precious seconds before it was apparent to the men on the deck below, Elsa called out to warn of each new wild evolution of the great fish. For an hour those irresistible rushes never ceased. Every second of that time the thin strand of Dacron was under immense pressure, and Shaza stood in the chair and used his weight against it, pumping the rod and churning the reel. He took turn after agonizing turn onto the spool, and then watched it dissipate again as the fish made another charge. One of the deckhands spilled seawater from a bucket over his shoulders to cool him. The salt burnt the abrasions around his waist, where the nylon straps of the harness had rubbed through his skin. The blood seeped from the injuries and stained his shorts watery pink. Every time the fish ran, the harness cut in a little deeper. The second hour was bad. The fish showed no sign of weakening. Shaza was streaming with sweat. His hair was sodden, as if he stood under a shower. The galls of the harness around his middle were bleeding freely. The working of the boat hammered his thighs against the arms of the chair, and he was bruising extensively. Elsa came down from the bridge and tried to pack a cushion between the harness and his torn flesh. She gave him a handful of salt tablets and made him drink 2 cans of Coke, holding them to his mouth while he gulped them down.
Tell me something. He grinned crookedly at her with agony in his single eye. What the hell am I doing this for?
Because you are a crazy macho man, and there are some things a man must do.
She toweled the sweat off his face and kissed him with a fierce protective pride.